Welcome to Fresno's Best Podcast. I'm your host, Jordan Maddox. Today, we're going to be talking about Fresno's nightlife scene. And you've probably noticed some of the same patterns that I have. Most rooms in this town are loud, bright, and pretty clearly designed to move you along to the next drink. There aren't a lot of places where you can actually sit down across from somebody and have a real conversation without yelling over a speaker or feeling like you've overstayed your welcome. That's exactly the gap that my guest is trying to fill. Fernando Macias is the general manager and creative director of Eden Wine Lounge. And what he's built over there is genuinely something Fresno really hasn't. Somewhere with the ambiance of an upscale lounge, but the comfort of a dive bar. With a wine list that actually tells a story and a fantastic cocktail program. In this episode, we get into the philosophy behind the Eden Wine Lounge, the lighting, the sound, the Saturday night switch where the lights drop and everything changes. And then we dig into the business side, how he prices a glass of wine, why he pivoted away from imports, how he feels about a food program, and what it took to staff a place where hospitality, actually means something. Let's go meet Fernando Macias. Quests, investigating, making convos to elevate guests. Politics, religion, culture, art, music, show some respect to the best little city left in the U.S. Fresno's best. Fresno's best. Fernando, where do you like to eat in Fresno?
Oh, man, that ranges. So I do like closest spot to me if it's late night and have a couple drink. I'll go to Tacos Mondo over here on Blackstone, right across the street from the Valero. It's a little taco truck. Solid people, solid food, up a store on the stick, cutting it off. That's solid. I also like My Guy Market's always solid. Got a shout out to Eddie out there. He's doing great things. He's in the hospital right now dealing with some stuff, but shout out to him.
I think Anthony's he had a post-surgery picture. He's on the mend. I don't know how long that's going to take, but...
Yeah, man, but another staple of Fresno, and that dude is as solid as could be, so you definitely like to support as much as I can over there.
For a My Guy order.
My Guy? Oh, dude. So I've been there since day one, so I go for the original chopped cheese, but if I can get, what's it called? The one with the Spam in it. I forget what it's called. I'm sorry.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I know.
Yeah, yeah. Because I love Spat and the Subies, and that's another one I like to hit Ono right here in the corner just because it's close by, but when in doubt. But anytime I could get that Spam in the mix, dude, solid.
I had whatever, I don't know if it's the same one, but I had whatever they, I think they called it a Filipino chopped cheese.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was so incredible. Yeah, he's doing great stuff. And the, you know which one I haven't had, but everyone's always posts about it when they get it, is the one with the bone-in rib.
The bone? See, yeah. That one eludes me too, dude. Every time I go, I'm like, dude, you're always get sold out so fast. Yeah. I'm like, man.
We're going to jump into a bunch of kind of nightlife, lounge, Fresno wine questions, but I want to start with kind of a pretty broad question. So imagine you're at a city somewhere not in California, far away, that they don't really have, maybe they understand LA, San Francisco, but they don't have a city of Fresno. And they looked to you and said, Fernando, how would you describe the nightlife scene of Fresno? What would you describe to them?
Nightlife in general in Fresno is definitely, it's an event. I think everybody treats nightlife in Fresno as an event. I think everybody correlates group chats. What are we doing tonight? It starts as early as weeks ahead or on the night of. And people get ready, they get dolled up, they get dressed up, the guys get the haircuts, they do a whole routine, get ready just to show out for a couple hours. And I think it's one of those things about Fresno that really makes it special is that it becomes more of a community aspect when going out at night, as opposed to it just being treating it like as a quote unquote bar hopping situation. I think people really indulge themselves in everything that Fresno has to do, especially in the nightlife. And that doesn't mean just going out to one bar, two bars, three bars. It's more so the whole journey of jumping back and forth. It's like you're bound to run into people along the way. So it's a beautiful. Yeah,
definitely small town. And we're going to get into how Eden fills a gap in Fresno. But if you were to kind of describe, just thinking about Fresno relative to cities similar size or bigger, what are our gaps in our nightlife? What are we missing?
Places that you could actually have conversations is really what it is. It's like a lot of times it's more what I've noticed, at least, is especially in the nightlife in Fresno. It's almost as so that, especially in the service aspect coming from hospitality side of looking at things, it's more the music's going to be too loud for you to actually have a conversation with the bartender or the person that you're with. And then number two, it's you're not going to be able to get the full experience of the location that you're in, meaning that there's nobody there to actually tell you what you're looking at, who decided to make these little changes here and there. It's more so just stop in, get a drink, move on to the next spot, get a drink, move on to the next spot. And then all of a sudden you're getting hot dogs on the street.
It's a pretty linear path,
but that's a reward that I'm looking forward to every single time.
I'm not playing ones for sure.
For sure.
So, yeah. Let me ask you a follow-up. I think people assume that nightlife is primarily for early 20s to mid to late 30s, you know, okay. Demographic. But is that true? Or
no.
Expand people's understanding of what nightlife means for different age demographics.
I think it's like Fresno's interesting because of the, in that same sense, you walk into a place and it'll be like freshly 21-year-olds. And then it's like the older people that are going to be in the different section of the room. And then, like I said, there's that inevitability of just crossing paths and having those conversations. So it's just, I think from what I've seen, I've met people as early as 21, all the way into like late 60s, early 70s, still out there in the nightlife, indulging themselves in everything that's going on. And a lot of them are almost like staples of the nightlife. A lot of these people, like everybody knows them. They're like, oh, there he is over there in the corner. And I'm like, these people have been doing it for so long that it just becomes part of the culture of the scene in Fresno. Everybody wants to talk to everybody. And it's so more so that I think community is just the base of all of it. 100%, yeah. I think in Fresno, for sure.
It's interesting though, because to push on this a little more, it feels to me like a lot of the environments are designed for that younger demographic and loud, chaotic,
yeah.
Meeting new people, the dating scene energy. And they're less designed for this demographic, even though older demographic, even though you said they are there. So is Fresno properly catering to older demographics in terms of its options?
I think not so much, actually. Now that you bring that up, it's actually an interesting point to bring up. It is more catered to the younger crowd, trying to get people into the doors. Because the thing is with the younger crowd is, it's a lot of more optics, meaning that people come in, like I said, in big groups, group settings, a lot of times with 21-year-olds. So from a business standpoint, it makes sense to cater to these bigger groups. However, it's like when they walk in, take a couple photos of a couple things, post it on Instagram, TikTok, whatever it may be, that doesn't necessarily mean that they're going to be return customers or being returning individuals they're going to be seeing on a regular basis. With the older crowd, from what I've noticed, is that they tend to be loyal to the spots that they go to because it's more catered to the full ambiance and the full relationship between the patron and the people serving them. So I think that's what's lacking a little bit in Fresno, more places that are more suited to being a place full of conversations that are allowed to have conversations, as opposed to it being a pretty place with a pretty ambiance, but it's too loud to actually have conversations.
Yeah. I guess. And I just did an interview at the PM Lounge. And so when I look at the PM Lounge, what they're doing, and then what Eden is doing, and the investment coming into enterprises like this, it seems like investors are seeing something about Fresno that needs to be tapped into. What do you think they're seeing in thinking about your business and then also the PM Lounge?
It's a very interesting point that you bring up too. It's just like, I think there's a big gap within that space of an actual lounge that you could actually chill back, relax, meet new people, conversate with other people, and then actually want to be there for longer than an hour or two. We, on our side, we see patrons be there from as early as we open all the way to when we close. And it's like they lose track of time based on the conversations that they're having with myself, with the staff, other people, people that they meet along the way. But that's the beauty of having a place that's catered to those individuals, is that you can create a special type of ambiance that you can't really do if it's loud music, bright lights. It's almost blinding. You almost lose track of what you're doing when you're in there. So what PM Lounge is doing, I think it's very necessary in Fresno. I think people need to have an upscale location to go to feel good about themselves. And on our side, it's like, we're not really necessarily quote unquote competition, because we actually are more of a juxtaposition on that whole idea. It's a class meets comfort situation on our side. We have a beautiful ambiance in our building. We have a beautiful ambiance in the way that we cater ourselves and the way we have conversations with people, but we're also very much like a dive bar in that same regard. That's where the juxtaposition comes into play, meaning that we don't take ourselves too seriously, nor do we want our patrons to take themselves too seriously. We want people to come in, find a space that they feel comfortable to be in, not worry about having to act a certain type of way in certain locations that sometimes require you to, and then just have a good time. Literally lounge back and relax. It's in the name. So we try to do that, and I hope PM Lounge is succeeding in that as well. And I think more places need to pop up in that situation. Happy to do it. Happy to do it for sure.
Okay, let's dig into some more specific questions about Eden. Do you think of Eden as like a neighborhood establishment, or do you see it more as drawing people from other parts of Fresno?
I think the ultimate goal is to draw more people from other parts in Fresno. We definitely have been very much blessed to have an amazing group of regulars that coming from the area that where we stand, because there's not a lot of options in the area to go out later. So Manhattan's is right next to us, which we love to support. A wonderful restaurant that's been a staple of Fresno. However, they close at 10 p.m. So it's like they don't really have anywhere else to go for a nightcap. You got Max's Bistro across the way with around the same type of hours. And besides that, it's not really much options in the area. So it's nice to have an ICAP location for people to come into. And the people that have been coming by that live in the area are very thankful to have us there. So happy to have them around. But in that same mindset, it's like we definitely want to cater that specific location of Fresno, which has been there for so long, to bring more people around, because you have Tower and you have the north side of Fresno, or some of the clubs are over here on the north side. And then you got Tower downtown, Brewery District down over there. And we're kind of like in the middle, which is a little bit of an awkward place for people, especially if you're drinking and you're going out and you don't want to necessarily risk getting a DUI and things of that sort, which I understand. However, I think there's a lot to do in the area that we're in. And I'm hoping people can start to come on our side and check all other spots, just switch things up. And I think what we're doing, being open later hours in the location that we're at, is going to, you know, bring more people to come in. And also we do a lot of things that work with local businesses, like even giving back to the Tower side of everything. We work with Piemonte's Deli just to get our meats and cheeses for the charcuterie boards that we offer. And we on occasion offer gelato from BB's Gelateria in downtown Fresno. So we want to cater to those people that already have staples in those locations in the, that side of town, to understand that we're kind of playing with the same court, playing on the same court as they are. So make them feel comfortable as well.
So one of the big pitches of Eden is that it's, like you said a few times now, it's a place where you can have a conversation. How do you balance it being too quiet or just quiet enough? Because there's that kind of awkward spectrum where it's almost too quiet and you can hear other people's conversations. So it's like people want to hear each other, but they also don't want to hear who's two tables down and talking about their ex.
This and the third.
You know what I mean? Like, how do you think about that?
You end up hearing somebody's entire lore.
I know. So how do you balance the sound?
So that tends to be my job for the most part, is standing by and making sure that I'm noticing that some people are quieting down based on the fact that we're too quiet. So upping the level of the music or changing the vibe of the music. We tend to play neo soul and house music a little bit with the BPMs on the house. We can get away with the sound aspect of everything like that. But if it's loud enough, I do like to tend to switch it over to the neo soul side. Now with conversations flow a little bit more. If it's one or two parties, however, on a slow day, and like you said, you can hear so-and-so having a conversation, that's where I kind of have to come into play a little bit too, or our staff have to do come into play and then come in as a character, more so having a conversation with somebody loud enough to where the projection of us being a part of the business doesn't really take away from other conversations flowing on other spaces, which I don't mind. I love talking to people, so I could yap all day long. They don't pay me enough for that.
How do you think about lighting? Because some of my favorite bars that, when I lived in bigger cities, they're dark. I almost like darkness is, I don't know. It's something that some places I think are scared to lean into, but I think people really like a moody, darker environment. So how did you think about both how the lighting should be and how much people should be able to see relative to the environment? Because you're also dealing with wine, where people won't see the colors, because that's important to tasting and experiencing the wine. So I know that's a big, broad question, but I guess I'm looking for your philosophy around lighting.
No, I'm glad. That's actually a very fun question, in my opinion, because me and the guys talk about it all the time, as we want to create a very sultry type of ambiance, but not let it be too dim to the point where you're kind of squinting to look at the wine. So the lighting is something that's actually brought up to us and we talk about quite a bit, and we try to maintain it to a point where it's dim enough to where you feel comfortable. And it's almost like that mindset of you're at home hanging out on the couch, and then you just start to unwind, and then you just get like all the stress from work and this, that, and the third just kind of gets away from you. In my opinion, that tends to be in a very lightly dim room watching television. So trying to kind of go off of that type of energy where you feel very comfortable, you want to just kind of like rest your shoulders back and just sit back, especially on our nice comfortable couches, is something that we try to go for. Honestly, I haven't had anybody mention anything about the lighting, but I'm glad that you brought that question up, because it's something that we do focus a lot of attention to. I'm glad. Yeah. And going back to it, it's like, I love a good dive bar, and all dive bars are very dimly lit. And like I said, most of the great conversations that I've had while having a drink have been at some sort of dive bar. So
I think there's a psychological effect too, right? Because like, when it's darker in a room, it's like your brain is telling you it's time to relax and chill. And so if it's high energy room, that's loud and bright, I feel like your brain enters a different zone. I did hear something interesting from a friend that has been a GM at various bars. One of the things he told me, and it's an interesting insight, is that they have done research and they found that when it's louder in rooms, people drink more. And it's like the energy of the noise causes them to consume more. Do you find that people drink more slowly because your room is a lot chiller and the environment's quieter and dimmer?
You're pulling literally thoughts and conversations that we've had while planning all of everything as we've done everything at Eden, literally straight out of my brain.
I have telepathy. I can read my...
It's insane, actually, because one of the big things that people talk about is for patrons that walk in never looking anything up, and then they walk in on Saturday nights when we do the after hours. So it's 10 p.m. to 1 a.m. We turn off all the lighting and then we go for more moody ambiance. They don't know what we got going on. They just walk in and they're like, oh, this is a club, basically, right? Yeah. But to your same point, turn off the lights and all of a sudden a full room of people that have been sitting at the same spot for the longest period of time, all of a sudden want to get up and talk to people that they've been sitting in the same room as them, but they haven't even looked at them in that direction whatsoever. So now more drinks are getting ordered. More people are having conversations. They feel more safe, but it's more so you don't want to do it with overkill, right? So that's why we only do it on Saturdays from 10 to 1. It's like the people that were there early enough to get a couple drinks in start to feel a little bit more loose. And then that little surprise where the lights kick off and the lights change a little bit and the music gets a little louder. All of a sudden, that psychological effect, like you just said, tends to switch up. And they're like, I want another drink. I should go talk to that person over there that's been looking at me the whole time, right? Yeah, it's a nice thing to watch. And we enjoy it very much. And it's something that we noticed when we were first getting ready to open up when we were doing our soft opening. It was like Saturday night, we're open till 1 a.m. It's 10 p.m. People have been there for a couple hours. And it's almost like people are like looking around, kind of waiting for something to happen. And then they're almost wanting something to happen. So we were like, we definitely got to switch something up at least one day out of the week. And it helps us out too, because my social battery by Saturday night is so as soon as we put the lights and the music up, goes right back up. So it helps me out too.
Absolutely. Let's jump into kind of some questions around the business side. Can you talk to people? Because I don't think people fully understand this. Talk to me about how you price a glass of wine.
So we'd go for the average markup, the 400% markup. So we don't try to ever over exceed our boundaries when it comes to the pricing of wine. We go for as minimal as possible, with the profit margins being as insane in the wine industry for the people that know. You don't want to go necessarily for upper tier wine, which we did at the beginning. We had a full menu of import wine that was delicious and amazing. However, the cost on that is insane for a glass of wine, $40 for a glass of wine. And is it going to be happening on an occasion to where it's going to be smart for us on a business standpoint? Or we bring it down to where we can offer a couple glasses for $16, $12, $14. Those tend to sell a little bit more.
Let me interrupt you real quick, Fernando, because I've heard from winery owners, tasting rooms, sometimes you'll open a very expensive bottle of wine to pour one customer a glass of wine, but then that person might not re-up, and then no one else that night orders that same high-end bottle of wine. Yeah. Wine that maybe you had decent margins on ends up losing you money because people aren't ordering it. And then you have a half bottle of wine that was $150 or whatever, and no one's finishing it. Is that something that you consider in thinking about how you choose wines?
It's actually very important to us, because we made that mistake at the beginning, is having all these lucrative wines on our listing at the beginning, and then serving only one glass of a bottle, it goes flat and it doesn't taste the same way. And then all of a sudden we're having to throw all these expensive bottles. It's something that we strayed away from, and which is now we changed our pricing to where there's some wines that can only be purchased by the bottle, which makes more sense for us. If we were to, we could definitely charge glass prices, but considering, like you just said, it's very expensive on our side. We're a mom and pop shop at the end of the day. We can't really afford to go ahead and lose those small numbers, because those small numbers add up very quickly. 100%. We want to make sure that you have comparable wine to appease everybody. They're looking for reds and whites, and then at the same time, try to find a mid value wine and then a lower tier value wine that's still very solid. But as far as the price point, it won't hurt if that bottle goes dead. So you got to be smart with those decisions too.
For sure. When you're thinking from the business side, what does it look like from the business side, the economic side, when someone orders a glass of wine versus a bottle of wine? Where are the margins different there for you guys?
No, they're dang near similar because of the way that we market up exactly to, okay, to that same tea. The same margin that we'd be making from the bottle would be the same margin that we're making from the glass. And it's just, being that we're new, we don't want to overexceed our boundaries. We want to go ahead and do a nice, fair price point for everybody coming in, especially being our first year in business. And it's like, we're happy just getting what we get as the days go by. So 100% try to make it as fair as possible.
Yeah. I remember when I was having some conversations with some of the guys that started Moses McQueen's a couple years ago, and they were thinking through their food menu. And I was talking to them about around the philosophy of food. Food often can be like what they call a loss leader, where it's like something where you don't make a lot of money, but what it does is it keeps people in the seats. So then they order drinks, which tend to be the higher margin items. How did you think about your food offerings, what you would have, and the strategy behind it?
Oh, man. Honestly, considering that we're not a full kitchen, has been one of the things that we're very excited to start working on is the food program, because it's something that I'm very passionate about as well. We offer charcuterie boards, and like I mentioned, we try to make it as lucrative as possible if we're offering a limited amount of food. Just because if we only offer four items for food, and these individuals are hungry and they want to order something, I want to make sure it's an abundance of food to the point where, like you mentioned, they're going to want to stick around. It's not going to be finished in about 10, 15 minutes. I want it to be like sitting at the table for at least 30 minutes. Enough for everybody to snack on, depending on the crowd that you got with you. And then at the same time, make it aesthetically pleasing enough and make the quality good enough to where people are going to look at it, and it's not just food. They're going to take a second to look at it, and they're like, hold on, everybody pull out the cameras, take the photos real quick. And then that takes a good 10-minute conversation piece that involves them enjoying the food, and then take the photos and then dig in. We use Piemonte's Deli to source all the meats and cheeses. We try to do seasonal boards. When we first opened, it was all spice heavy boards because we opened in at the tail end of summer. So that was the theme that we went with that. The one we have right now is a lot more, I guess, digestible, just because we're in that weird springtime season where we have a couple spice on the board. We also have a little bit of red copa that has no spice to it whatsoever. We were doing imported prosciutto for a while. And now we also add farm to table fruits and nuts. We go to Kerman, Hanford, and Avenal for everything that we source. And then also try to use fun stuff too. Like we offer chocolate lover board, and that one's a fun one just because that's just a bunch of chocolate goodies that we get from a bunch of different markets and stores that we just cater all together. And it's like nice to pair with a nice glass of red wine, especially if you've already had dinner somewhere else, like at the Manhattan's or Max's. And then we just started adding our Mediterranean board, which is a selection of Armenian meats and cheeses that we only offer on Saturdays, but also comes with some house-made dips, hummus and tzatziki and pita bread that we go ahead and add there. And then on Sunday, we do our brunch. It's a small brunch, 10 to 3. We can't do eggs. We can't do the bacon, the potatoes that everybody looks forward to on the weekends. However, we don't want to be closed on Sunday, so we decided to do a small brunch menu that offers artisan paninis with side salads and then fruit sides and then bottomless mimosas, just because it'd be interesting to see what we can do when we get a full kitchen involved in the back, because we have a lot of ideas and we're not afraid to try anything. So our next step is getting something going in the back for sure, as far as the food goes, because I think that's the one thing that we definitely have to dial in a little bit more, in all honesty.
Do you find that when people come in, they get a drink first and then the drink leads to the food? Or do you think that people come in with it in mind that they're getting a snack? What's the order of operations in people's heads typically?
So it's interesting because social media has a lot to play in that, right? So a lot of people have been coming in specifically for the charcuterie boards because they saw a picture of, going to my point, someone posted a picture and they're like, that boy looked amazing, I need one. And a lot of people have never even looked at the wine listing, never looked at our drink listing, but know we have a really good charcuterie board. So they come in just for the charcuterie board. But then some people see the cocktails, the wine-based cocktails that we made, saw a picture of those and they're intrigued. I saw an espresso martini, it's made with apple wine, I want to try that, let me go ahead and come by. So they'll go for the drink right off the bat. And then some people will see a certain type of wine and then they'll come in for that. But for the majority, a lot of our patrons that know us already know exactly what they're coming in for. So that's a nice spot. It's like we're starting to put our name on these little niche crowds that have a certain thing they're looking forward to, and they're coming to us for it. So I think we're special for sure.
Okay. One more question before we move sections here. The world of wine is changing. I've been reading so many kind of long think piece articles about both changing in alcohol consumption, but then also what people are willing to pay for a bottle of wine. So when you've been doing your sourcing work and trying to pick and select wines, can you talk about what the landscape looks like, where you go to, the offerings, whether you're seeing trends in certain directions? I'm just curious about what the sourcing aspect of your world looks like.
So we do see the menus. It helps us out a little bit, considering, like I said, it's our first year in business. So we want to see what works, what doesn't, and it gives us a good idea to play by ear and get that feedback, because the best opinions will be the people that are coming in and actually tasting everything. So when we started with the import selection, it was great and it was wonderful to have, and people would give us our feedback on that. The only issue with that was distribution was an issue at the time being, just because it was during the tariffs and everything that was going on with that. So we decided to stray away from imports and then decided to do the seasonal menu selection. So we started, our second menu was all local wineries. There's plenty of local wineries out here that are amazing. The Cruz, the Solitary, the Toca, the Ficklins, the Quaddies, the list goes on and on. And if I forgot to mention anybody, I apologize, but an amazing selection over there. And then we have what we currently offering is our Napa and Paso selection, which a lot of people were asking for, and we were very excited to bring it on, and this is not going to be our last one. The problem is like what Napa and Paso is that in Fresno, there's so many people that go to Napa and Paso. So they all have memberships at different wineries and they're club members at this, that, and third. So everyone's expecting to see a certain selection from a certain winery. And it's like, there's so much of an abundance that we want to make sure that we don't over exceed and then just throw everybody on there right off the bat. So I try to only pick key players and then we'll slowly change it as we go. Right now, something that I'm very excited that we're offering that's off menu. And we do that as well, as offer off menu items for a limited supply, depending on if it sells, we'll end up in putting it on the menu full time. As this delicious Sauvignon Blanc Prosecco blend from Paso Robles called Paso Seco. That's amazing, especially right now that we're starting to get to the warmer weather, especially on a Sunday. If you come by for brunch during the daytime, it's an amazing thing to drink on our patio. And then we're working on something that's a Lemon Meyer Spritzer out of Paso Robles as well. That one's going to be more of a base for a spritzer that we're working on currently. But like I mentioned, is if you're open-minded enough to take in all comers, and then, which I always welcome anybody that has a winery, whether it's small or big, to come by and give me a tasting or let me come over to you and check out what you guys got going on. It's like just taking the time to actually go out and meet these people and getting the stories from the wine itself. Because at the end of the day, a lot of these wines come with stories as well. So that's something that you have to appreciate at face value for sure. It's not something that could just be done over the phone or through text message. It's something that you have to make sure that you taste for yourself with the person that's making it or the person supplying it, and then get the whole rundown of everything.
Okay. We're about to jump into my favorite section, which is called overrated versus underrated. I'm going to throw a bunch of things at you. You tell me whether you think they're over or underrated and why. And then, of course, Fernando, feel free to pass on any of these if I attack any of the sacred cows.
Keeps it a little fun.
I am nervous.
All right, we'll start with one. And it's, my question comes from a friend of mine who likes to travel to Japan. And something that's really popular there, and we're seeing more and more in this country, is listening bars, where conversation is discouraged. And people come in the bars to kind of quietly drink and listen to records. Do you think those are over or underrated? Underrated? Okay, you want more bars where you can just sit at the bar quietly? And
only because we don't have that here. I think at least one. But if there was like an overkill of it, like three or four of them, I'm like, okay, dude, just go home. And I do that already at home.
Solitude extended.
It happens every single time I've had too many to drink. I sit down on the couch and I throw on YouTube music videos for at least 3 hours.
Yeah, the friend of mine that was describing at least the versions that are in Japan that he went to is, he was in one where they were like, him and his partner were talking and basically got glares and shishes. We're in a bar and they're like, what's a listening bar?
No talking.
Yeah, you can whisper maybe, but anyway.
I guess it would be a cool idea to make a library style bar where you
were all seen those. Yeah.
That's awesome. That's a cool idea for sure.
All right. Next one. This is one I ask everybody. Me and Ed's Pizza.
Bumper Fireball, dude. That was like luxury pizza. Say overrated. I live right next to one, so I get one all the time. So underrated.
Yeah.
Do you have one? For me, because I have way too much, dude. I eat it all the time.
Is there, I always ask people this, what's, because people have preferences on certain Me and Ed's in town. Do you have your favorite location?
It's got to be the one that's the closest to. The one right here on Nice. Yeah, this one right here on Nice.
Oh, yeah, that one's always, there's a lot of movement in that one. That one's always going.
Yeah, they take good care of me. They're a combination. But.
Next one, a wine influencers.
Dan. Overrated. I think, and this is going to be a hot take, and no one kill me, please, for this. I think just the influencing scene in general has become a little bit of an overkill, I think. my biggest issue is more so the ones that you like the paid ads situation is becoming a little too much. I feel like I've always been an avid appreciator of food critiquers, food reviewers before the TikTok and everything. So I think it's just straight away from what it originally was. Now that if you're asking somebody, hey, pay me this much amount to come by and try everything, it's like we're way past what it originally was supposed to be, which was somebody reviewing it for what it is and the experience that you have in that exact moment. So if they're doing it for that side of it, they're just doing it for the love of the game, underrated. If they're doing it and they're asking for payment, overrated.
Okay, next one. This is one that I have interesting feelings about. I'd care shares. Sparkling Reds.
Oh.
How do you feel about Sparkling Reds or even Cold Reds? There's like this kind of like movement towards that. I'm curious.
So a lot of people have been coming by lately and it's been a Zinfandel most part. Can I get some ice in my cup before I get the Zinfandel? And I'm like, and they want to let it chill for a little bit. Like, that's happened at least 3 or 4 times in the last month. And it's been an interesting one to see. So I guess I'm not a big fan of the Sparkling Red, but maybe I just haven't found my fancy yet, but it seems like there's a movement.
Next one, kegged wine.
Oh, dude. Kegged wine. Okay, so it does affect the flavor. It affects everything. I've, from experience, dealt with kegged wine before. So overrated, but at home, if you throw a kegger at home with wine instead of a box wine, it could be a good time. It could be underrated at home in a home setting, but overrated in general. Overrated in general. Yeah.
It definitely sounds dangerous for at home, but that's a whole different subject. All right. Another one. Reservation systems. There's a lot of bars in town that do it. I know you guys take reservations. How do you think about the world of reservations in the bar scene? Do you think there's too much of it, not enough of it, right amount?
I don't know. So we're reservation preferred. I always tell people, but we have a misconception that's reservation only. It's just, we want to make sure you get a spot. Reservation preferred. Underrated. There's a lot of bars that I wish I could check out, but sometimes you walk in there, no seats. You know what I mean? Yeah. For certain locations, it makes sense. I think for upscale bars, I think for sure underrated. For dive bars.
Are there bars where it doesn't make sense to have a reservation system?
Any sort of, if I go to Tower Sports and it's like, I have to make a reservation. When I try to get to the door, they'll be like, what's your reservation? I'm gonna be like, dude, what are we talking about? Yeah. Let me just in there.
If you're walking into the Brig off Blackstone and they're asking for, that would be hilarious if they have for a reservation.
If I walk into Grog's on karaoke night and they're telling me I need a reservation, I'm gonna be like, dude.
So you think it's like the kind of, it's about the clientele more than the bar?
I think it makes some more sense for higher traffic places, right? I think the only thing I could think of right off the top of my head is that needs a reservation is going to be something more like modernist during their Christmas time.
Oh, yeah.
Which totally makes sense, dude.
That's the hottest reservation in town during Christmas time. It's so hard to get one.
The first time I went, I was an idiot. I thought you could just walk right in.
three-hour wait or something.
So many people. I thought I could. No. Yeah, that makes sense. So there's places that it makes sense in. It's just, yeah, if I try to go into a bar that's serving me Coors Light for $3, I'm like, and I need a reservation, it's got to make sense.
Yeah, that makes zero sense. Yeah. All right, next one. And I'm curious your perspective because you're in this world in a slightly different way than a winery or a tasting room winery. Do you think wine clubs are over or underrated?
Underrated. I think they need their place because we don't offer the full wine experience that a lot of people tend to look for. So it's like, we get a lot of, not necessarily a lot of flack for it, but like I said, we're a juxtaposition of wine. You know what I mean? We don't do the full experience. And I think those places are necessary for people that are really indulging it. And I am a geek of wine as well. So I love those experiences. So and I'm a member of Unser Winery. So it's just, I can't say overrated. It's definitely underrated.
The next one, I was talking to a friend of mine whose husband is going through the process of getting a sommelier certified. Do you think sommelier certifications are over or underrated in your mind?
Underrated.
Yeah. We need more people with certifications like that.
The reason why is because all the sommeliers that have been through our place are amazing. They understand what we're doing. I've had so many wonderful conversations with sommeliers and they treat wine like it's their baby. You know what I mean? It's true affection of what they got going on. And on the opposite side of the spectrum, my hardest customers, and I love all of you the same way, are going to be the self-proclaimed wine snobs when they walk in.
Yeah.
I think there are sommeliers, and there's that little bit of, I just know what I like, and that's not necessarily just a certification in any sense. So trying to appease that mindset becomes a little bit of a tricky situation, but I think sommeliers are definitely underrated. I think there should be more out there for sure.
Yeah. Don't be a wine snob. You never really know if you're going to like something and oftentimes they're putting a lot of value on the price of the wine.
And 100%.
And it's social class signaling, which is fine, but that's not about the wine. It's about your image of yourself. But anyway, that's my soapbox. Next one, QR code menus.
QR code menus are underrated.
I don't generally like them. So sell me.
So I like the convenience of them. So I was going to say underrated, but overrated, because I take a lot of time constructing these nice little pretty menus and stuff like that. And I love a really good niche menu that I want to almost take. Actually, on my wall, I have a menu from Seneca in San Diego. So I'm over. Oh, you know what? I take my answer. Overrated.
We come back to last.
I want to see some beautiful art on a piece of paper that you can just look at. And then it also comes with it. No, overrated. Overrated. I changed my mind. I don't even know where the underrated
is. This was great. Yeah. Just came full circle. It's perfect.
I talked myself out of it. I don't know where. Like, it's just the energy drink is already. I've been fully caffeinated. No, I'm starting to wake up now. That one really peed me off a little bit. I'm on.
Two more. This one's interesting. THC drinks.
Underrated.
Yeah. Do you see a future where it's like menus are like alcohol and THC and it's kind of level?
There's a big boom for sure. I just found out that Pabst Blue Ribbon is doing a THC drink, which is really, really weird. Yeah. For out of all of the beer companies, I'm like, all right, Pabst Blue Ribbon, jump in the lead. I think there's a scene for sure. There's a lot of movement in that, like THC based restaurants and things like that. And I could see I'm surprised there's not more of a push for a smoking lounge or just a lounge that allows you to drink THC infused drinks and stuff like that. Something like that would be really cool.
Do you think it will change the industry if THC drinks become more popular and prominent?
Not necessarily. I don't think so, because the effects are the complete opposite of what you're looking for from the alcohol standpoint. I think alcohol, is more for...
I meant what would the effect be to the bar scene? Like people are at a bar and they're drinking THC drinks, which can be, some of them will be maybe sativa and be an upper, might be hybrids that have the kind of lower register. Do you think it'll change the environment of bars if people
see me? For sure. I think for the singles out there, for sure, the conversations are going to be flowing differently. If somebody's on THC, the other one's super drunk on something else, you know what I mean? Two different vibes clashing. It might get a little weird with the vibe, but overall, it's in all reality, especially being in Fresno and going out enough, it's all these people are getting high on the other side, you know what I mean? Whether it be in the parking lot or right before they get into the bar and this and the third. So I think if we could make it to where they can get those on location without having to do things in a sketchy manner, I think it would be more appropriate. And I think it kind of pushed the whole sentiment forward of relaxing on the whole THC side a little bit, as far as optics go for the old people that don't really understand it or want to understand it.
Yeah. Okay. Last one. There's been this kind of rumblings about the death of the cork. Lots of wineries are moving to the twist cap and synthetic corks, moving away from those traditional corks. Do we need corks?
Cork walls are pretty cool.
The trash from it is...
So I've been...
Because people, when they see a screw cap, they go, cheap, lower cheap, quality. Do you find that to be true, though?
I don't think so. However, that's debatable, because I've had people find me on that a little bit, actually. The corking and the cinnamoning from the cork itself, and it's different. And then you're really straying away from the traditional values, because when you order the bottle and you allow the person to sniff the cork before tasting the first sip of the glass and everything like that.
It's a ritual, right?
It's a complete thing.
So it's changing this experiential factor of wine.
Yeah. So it's hard for me to even say anything, because we don't offer that service in our location. However, there is an appreciation, like you said, and I don't want to stray away from a culture that's been dividend for so long. It's just you can't, you know what I mean? It's like splitting the G in a Guinness. You can't really you cannot. So I think it's underrated. I think corks need to stay for sure.
Okay. All right. Let's jump out of that section. I got a few more kind of bar questions. We're going to dip now into some other kind of sundry thoughts I had about a few different things. The first one that I wanted to ask you about, and it's an interesting world. I was curious, from a person working in your position, natural wines are this kind of phenomenon, and people are it. I understand part of the trend being this kind of understanding the ingredients kind of movement. Like people want to eat clean. They don't want additives or fillers or things. And a lot of traditional wine has additives to it that create balance and those kinds of things. And natural wines can be a little weird because in some respects, like, they can not be as good or as flavorful or as balanced because there's less control. It's a little bit like, I think it resembles like organic food where, you know, there's a uniformity to non-organic food, and organic food can be a little different. You know,
yeah.
It's not always the same. You're not going to have the consistency that traditional methods of both farming and making wine have. So I'm curious your perspective. What's your view on natural wines and the role they're going to have in the wine industry?
I don't know if they're necessarily going to have a big impact. I could imagine there's going to be like one or two that are, because it isn't, we're in the early stages right now of getting that big push, that are really going to make the scene and then really plant themselves on the scene. But for the most part, I don't think there's going to be a huge effect on it. And to your point, every natural wine that I've tasted has not been necessarily my favorite either. But if I'm all about eating clean, like taking everything in as clean as possible. And to that point, right now we're using this Aperol that's completely clean called a Toast. It's the local family here in California that makes it. And that's super solid considering the fact that we don't have liquor and we can't use Aperol and our drinks and stuff like that. So working with them and then using that, and it's wine-based and everything, it's nice to have an option. I just don't know if it's necessarily a niche market that's going to explode as much as people consider it taking over. So I think it'll be a slow burn for sure. I think they'll find their niche crowd, but I don't think it's going to be something that's going to take over the wine industry for sure.
Okay, let's talk about cocktails next. You also have a cocktail menu beyond your wine menu. Do you see the cocktail menu as complementing your wine offerings, or are these kind of like independent tracks where the cocktail menu has one vibe and then the wine menu has another vibe?
So I'll tell you this. When we first opened, I never in a million years thought it was going to be such a big push on the cocktail side of it. I thought people were going to be coming. The turnout that we got was not what we initially expected for the lounge and the place that we put ourselves in, Fresno, and what we expected. A lot of people like something with a little bit more ABV. So I can't do shots, obviously, Hawaiian lounge, right? And so I needed to figure something out. And then working with these agave-based spirits and these wine-based spirits, it's been very nice to see the turnout. I was very nervous. I think I was more nervous at any point during this entire tenure of getting this place going for the cocktails, being that I've never worked with agave-based spirits. I really haven't conducted a menu full of cocktails like that ever in my life. And the feedback was insane. People loved them. They were obsessed with them. And then people have been coming back for them over and over again. Like I said, it's like a niche market that we put ourselves in and that people are very excited to try. And it's gotten to the point now that I'm conducting a monthly menu of cocktails every single month. Completely different. And that's a labor of love for sure. And I like to mention that to people. It's like everything is made from scratch. In a day and age that AI can easily make these cocktails for anybody, it's something that we really pride ourselves in, making these from scratch and with fresh ideas and conversations that happen. And there is the crowd that comes in for the cocktails and there is the crowd that comes in for the wine. And sometimes those crowds mesh. And it's funny to watch the people that come in for the wine be apprehensive to the cocktails until somebody from their table orders a cocktail. And they're like, let me try that real quick. Tries it. And they're like, all right.
Fernando, what's your most underrated cocktail on your menu? That's maybe not orders as much as the others, but people should be because they're sleeping on it.
Well, I think so. This one's carrying over to the main menu just because it didn't get love until the tail end of the month of April. And I think people were a little thrown off by it, but our Fallen Angel that we just threw on the menu for the month of April was amazing. It's my iteration of a Devil's Margarita. And I didn't do that. I didn't come up with that drink until after Halloween. And I thought it would be the perfect Halloween drink just based on the way it looks. Bloody ombre and everything like that. So I didn't put it on a menu for the longest time. And then I decided to say, you know what? I've been sleeping on this one for a really long time. Let me just throw it on the menu. Considering that our cocktails tend to be on the sweeter side because of the agave-based spirits, this one isn't. And I'm very happy about that. And I was very nervous to see what the reception was going to be based on the fact that everybody's used to our drinks being sweeter. People love that drink. And it's been getting ordered left and right since I've been putting people on it. I had to sell a little bit. I had to be a salesman about it for a little bit. But that is definitely probably our most underrated drink that we've offered so far. It's just a classic margarita at the base and then topped off with some Austin Hope Troublemaker over the top. It's going to get you there quick. It's going to taste good. See what I'm doing.
I'll have to try that next time I come in.
I've been making a joke that's like it's like a classy AMF just because of the alcohol content.
All right. Before we close up, a couple questions around labor and staffing and stuff, which is just one of the big challenges in California with service industries is both consistent staffing and price points for labor. So could you give us a picture of what it's like to hire hospitality staffing in Fresno?
It's hard, man. I think going full circle moment, right? Everything that we do is catered to the hospitality side of everything. We want people to treat Eden like a third place. And that's important because that you have to cross a lot of boxes for a lot of people and make it very standardized for everybody to easily digest. And the big part of that is hospitality. So we went through, 300 something interviews, and we landed on we could only hire a small portion of people that we wanted to hire. But we didn't really necessarily go through resumes. And I've never been somebody that's ever interviewed based on experience. I definitely go based on conversation. And the number one thing is in this industry, whether it be restaurants, bar, food, and anything, is the ability to act quick is something that's been lost to a lot of people, meaning that people can throw something. You can have a good conversation with somebody and all of a sudden you say something that offended them. And it's, how are you going to be able to bounce back from that? That's something that's very important to me. So when dealing with these interviews and the process that we handled with the interviews was more so that we looked at the experience. We're like, okay, they worked before and they've done hospitality. And then just being like, cutting that out and just telling them, tell me about you. Just let's have a conversation and see where that conversation goes. A lot of people folded on that. They didn't know how to respond. They were ready to do arms crossed, poised up. And we just talk to you face to face and tell you how good of a worker I am and that my biggest weakness is I work too hard and this, that, and the third. And they weren't necessarily expecting me to be like, just talk to me. What's going on? How's your day? And they didn't know how to respond to that. And the ones that got hired did a really good job. And these people know how to talk to people and have conversations with people. And it makes me happy when people come back and they're like, we're selling by name value. And if individuals aren't getting called out by name value, then they're not doing their job as far as hospitality goes. So that was the biggest thing for us, is we wanted to make sure that these people would be considered almost characters of Eden. As if we were a TV show, like they're just on the cast 24/7, everybody knows them by name. So that was important to us for sure. And it's something that we pride ourselves for 100% on our entire staffing. And Mike, the operational manager who works his butt off day in, day out, they're in the early hours getting everything set up and still being able to have a conversation with people and with a smile. It's just like, we have a great staff that knows how to have a good time with everybody that comes in. So very proud of that.
Yeah, I agree. The bars that I like to go to, it's because they recognize me. It's that whole thing, the Cheers, like TV show.
It's exactly like Cheers, man. Yeah. It's funny because some of our staff, we love them to death, and you know what I mean? But some of them aren't necessarily wine people, and a lot of them had to learn on the spot. So sometimes they get thrown into the fire, and it's how do you handle while you're in the flames? It tells you a lot about the individual, and they find their ways, man. And it's just funny because the people that are like quote unquote wine snobs end up loving these people just because they're like, oh, I'm cute. It's almost like a learning as they go situation. And it's nice to watch these people grow into their own, especially for our patrons that come in and see them learn more stuff about themselves, learn more about hospitality in general. It's just nice to watch for sure.
Okay. I ask all of my guests how what they do affects the way they see Fresno. Depending on your profession that you choose, you're going to get a kind of certain slice or perspective on a place like Fresno. So how does working in the hospitality industry, in the world of wine and cocktails, how has that affected the way you see the city of Fresno?
I think everyone's dealing with a lot of stuff right now in general, and just in life in general for anybody, work, stress, life. And I've always loved bars, lounges, restaurants. I love going out and I love having somewhere else besides my actual home to call home. And I think our ultimate goal is to provide that for people, is to provide a place that they can come in and have a good listing of drinks, good listing of food, a good conversation with people, and just find a place that they can consider something to be of a third place, a third home for them. And I think that's the ultimate goal, I think, for any establishment, especially if you're just providing drinks, is to provide a very welcoming culture overall. And then also not a fighting culture where we take on collaborations and with business that wants to and is open to working with us or any anybody that wants to work on something as far as events goes. We take in everybody from Fresno in any way, shape, or form, and just want to let people know that we are a community based, and we ultimately want to be part of the overall theme of what makes Fresno great, and which, in my opinion, is the community aspect of everything.
We close these podcasts each time with book recommendations. Do you have a book you'd like to recommend to the audience?
Oh, dude, I just changed my Instagram bio, and it's going to sound so pretentious, but I just changed it to the Rick Rubin of hospitality. And
oh, yeah. You like Rick Rubin?
I just like him because I'm a younger guy, and I'm in a sea of fishes that are very big, and a lot of these guys they come from the old school scene of hospitality, and I'm not necessarily 100% on the year side of them, but I have a love for the game, and I have such an appreciation for the game that I consider myself to be a Rick Rubin because I'm not as considerably talented as these individuals have been doing in such a long time. I think I'm not there yet. But I do think I like what I like, and I know what I know, and I think what I know and what I like tends to be the same for most people, and that's what Rick Rubin's role was with a lot. He never actually produced, he never actually did anything behind the scenes besides saying, well, that was good, that's not good, let's not do that. And it's almost like a backhanded compliment to myself a little bit, and I think that's something that I try to focus on. But The Creative Act really was something that I really enjoyed reading this year. And honestly, anything from Hunter S. Thompson that makes me feel just a little bit on the creative loony side of everything, I think, is always going to be a good read as well. So
We need to read more stuff about weird stuff and then stuff about curation or developing taste, because those are such important things for the future of AI and just oversaturation of knowledge. To be able to look at something and go, this is good and this is less good, is such a skill that many of us need to really tap into.
100%, dude. And it's like being okay with being considerably wrong, which meaning that whether I like something doesn't necessarily mean that somebody else knows something that I like, which I just said that is true for the most part, but being okay with understanding that you're not going to be able to fill everybody's cup the same way. You know what I mean? And if you could take ego away from everything, I think anybody can do this type of business, because I think as long as you're a lover of the game and you just love what you do, and which is something that I 100% agree on within myself, is that I am okay listening to people's critiques, criticisms, love, hate, whether all of it coming my way, just because it's ultimately just going to build to something better and greater later down the road.
Awesome. To close up here, Fernando, what's going on at Eden this month? We're entering a new month right now. It's May 1st today. So what can people be looking out for? And then just remind us kind of the basics of location, hours, those kinds of things.
So May, we are just getting ready to finalize, starting tomorrow, our new cocktail listing for the month of May. More rum theme, so I think very tropical-esque. I do have a really delicious rocket pop flavored cocktail. The vibe that I'm going for with the three colors, with the red wine and the blue, I might bring it back for July as a slushy. Just a heads up, we might start doing that as well. Yeah, that's going on. Micheladas starting this month as well. We just started at the tail end of last month, but want to mention it to people too that we are making our micheladas here in-house, and they're delicious. You can make it a boozy one with a shot of agave tequila over the top, get you straight to the point. It's a really good thing to drink on and sip on. We have a couple private events this month, and we're excited. I like to always mention to people, we are very happy and welcoming to anybody that wants to do a private event with us, and I'm very easy to work with as far as getting that curated and getting everything going with that. It's a big month this month for private events, actually. We have a lot of those going on. Getting ready to start doing live music sometime soon. I'm hoping later this month. Instagram is going to be the best way to find out, but we're trying to do live jazz on every other Thursday is going to be the game plan. It's just more so trying to figure out how to curate and correlate all these different bands and music talents that are here in Fresno. I think there's an abundance of them. So if anybody wants to reach out to me, please let me know, because I'd be more than happy to host. And then just our after hours, we just did a Michael Jackson tribute this last week for the movie coming out. That was on Saturday. For people that want to come out for that more DJ club scene, keep a lookout for all the theme nights that we got coming up later in the month. And yeah, getting ready to, it'd be okay for me to say this at this point. We are in the process of hopefully being transitioned over to a full bar and lounge. So if everything works out in the way that it should, hard alcohol should be coming down the road. So something to look forward to later down, maybe June, July, later in the year, maybe even down to August. But just for everybody coming in, wondering what the next steps of our growth is, that's something that's going to be working on too. And patio seating, now that the weather's getting better too, is getting that finalized and finished, because there's a lot of work to be done. But anybody that comes out to our patio knows that it's very comfortable to sit out there. And now that the weather's getting better, please come by for sure.
Awesome. Fernando, I love what you guys are doing over there. I love that we're getting different kinds of options for different kinds of folks. I really appreciate what you're doing. And I think it's going to have a positive impact on the neighborhood and the city. So thank you so much for taking the time to talk with me today.
And thank you so much for talking to me as well, dude. Appreciate it so much.
Fresno's best.
Thanks for listening, everyone. As always, you can support this podcast by leaving us a rating or review or by making a financial contribution at our Patreon page, which is www.patreon.com/Fresno's Best. We'll see you next time.